I just want my podcast to be able to just reach someone and know that, okay, I'm not alone. I've gone through similar things, or I know someone that has gone through similar things.
Hey everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks, where we talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we are in LifeWord Studio in Conway, Arkansas, broadcasting in over 150 languages to 127 countries to a potential listening audience of 3 billion people. Today with us, I have Lynette Stoner. Lynette, it's good to have you with us here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so Lynette has started a podcast here, or is about to start, Surrender to Serenity. So tell us a little bit about the premise behind your podcast.
So I had the idea about 3 summers ago. I was going through a time, really difficult time, with finances, with my husband, and I was doing daily walks, listening to podcasts, and I was really listening to like mental health podcasts, some Christian podcasts as well, but there was nothing that I felt fit me specifically. I was looking for something that was more geared towards church trauma and what it was like growing up in a pastor's family, but specifically, I'm Hispanic, and so there was not a lot of podcasts directed towards my culture and what I had went through. And so I got the idea then it would be awesome to have something that I can relate to. And then kind of the idea started, well, why not you?
Yeah.
And I pondered on it for a very long time. There was a lot of healing that I still needed to do before I really decided, okay, this is the route that I want to go towards. And so my podcast is going to be about grief, growing up in a pastor's family, just a lot of things that have happened in my life in regards to really those topics and how it's affected me and the things that I've done to help me get to the point that I am now.
Yeah. So church trauma isn't something we like to talk about. And most of the time we don't even like to think that it exists, mm-hmm. but it does. Mm-hmm. Even more so growing up in a pastor's home. 'Cause we, you know, pastor gets all of it, but we hear it, but we really can't respond. So tell us a little bit about growing up in a pastor's home, what that was like for you.
My dynamic was very different. So it was my aunt and uncle. They were pastors of a congregation in California. And early on, I don't have a lot of memory of that. I was very, very young when they were pastors in California. I believe I was about 8 years old whenever they transitioned from California to Arkansas. And so that is really where a lot more of my memories are at. There was a lot of things that were happening in California, but again, I was too young to really realize it. Now it's more stories that I've heard. But from 8 and on, when my aunt and uncle arrived here a couple years later, my aunt decided to pastor a church on her own without my uncle. And so I was there every Sunday, every Wednesday. We would do like church overnights. In Spanish, they're called vigilias. And so I'd be there all night. And I was also on my aunt's choir team. I was Sunday school teacher. Just played a lot of roles in that. But I think the biggest thing really that I noticed early on were my older cousins that were my aunt and uncle's kids, just seeing their drift away from the church, I questioned it a lot. I was really just forced to go to church all the time. And of course, you know, I did it. But as they got older, there wasn't a, hey, you have to come anymore. They were adults. And so I always wondered why they weren't going to church. And slowly started catching on as to, okay, there's things going on here. There's hurt as to why they wouldn't. They just stopped going to church in general. And so it wasn't until maybe 2 years ago, really, that my family started to really talk about what went on and why there was a disconnect for all of us, but mainly my older cousins, as to what happened, why they stopped attending church. But really what I saw is just I would say the wrong way to use the word is the biggest thing that I saw. I would, you know, see whether it was my own family members preaching or it was a guest from another country coming or another city coming to preach. They would say one thing, and then behind the scenes, I was surrounded. Although I wasn't the pastor's child, I was still the pastor's family. And so I knew a lot of the other pastor's kids, and I would see them or hear them explain to me things that were going on in their home. And it was the same things going on in my family, like sexual abuse, physical abuse, even fraudulent things, money laundering, things like that. And so it was just odd to me that on Sundays and Wednesdays and sometimes Fridays and Saturdays, we put on a happy, you know, face, we get all dressed up. But then you're seeing the people on the pulpit preach all these things and then not live by it on the other days. And so then I really started to see and understand why there was such a disconnect with myself and my cousins. And we came from such a religious family, and it was, church was forced on us, God was forced on us. And now barely any of my family really believes in God, or they just have really deep questions as to why things were happening.
Yeah. You know, it's very difficult. There's this term that's become popular of deconstructing faith. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, people say, okay, well, this is what I was taught, but this is what I see. Mm-hmm. And they begin to pull away from that. And it's unfortunate that that happens, but I would say it happens a lot more than we would like to think that it does. Mm-hmm. What was, when there was that pulling away of the older cousins, was there any communication between you and them that kind of gave any type of reasoning for why they pulled away?
Oh, yeah. Some of my cousins were just more so, we don't want to go to church. But then I did have cousins that are very vocal. They let us know, like, we don't believe in God. How can someone hurt me so bad that's leading, you know, sometimes huge, huge crowds just be so evil? And so they expressed their hurt and their traumas, not as much as, like I said, the past 2 years or so, my family has really opened up. But I knew then that there was a lot of just evil things going on, and they expressed that. But also just not just the acts itself, just the portrayal of it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do a good job of explaining it to us. And I think just in general, they just expected us to understand the word. Mm-hmm. There was never do you have questions about a certain passage, or is there something that you want to dissect? It was never like that. It was just, you need to read the Bible on your own time, kind of figure it out. And then, kind of like I said earlier, several of my cousins and I were Sunday school teachers, but I don't feel like I actually understood the word. Mm-hmm. It was just, they needed a role to fill, and we were the pastor's family, and so we just kind of went in that role. But yeah, with my cousins, they did express it. Not to the level now, but they were vocal about it.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a huge fault of not just Christians, but of religious leaders, that we assume that people know these mm-hmm. things. We had a guy, it's been several years ago, and he was probably in his 40s, and he was pressure washing the front of the church. And, you know, the sun was shining, so a rainbow appeared, you know, under the prism. And mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, do you know what the rainbow means?" And he's 40-something. And I was like, I said, "Well, tell me what it means." Because I didn't, you know, of course, everybody knows mm-hmm. what the rainbow means, right? And he said, "It is God's promise that he would never flood the earth again." I said, "That's exactly right." And he said, "You knew that?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I've been in church all my life, and I didn't learn that till about 2 weeks ago." And then another time, we had this lady who was teaching Sunday school. And she was, you know, just a fill-in. And so I said, "Hey, the lesson this morning is on the book of Exodus." And she's like, "So what's that about?" And I'm going, "The Exodus from Egypt, you know?" And she was like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And so I think we have done a really good job of trying to get people in the faith, but not a really good job at getting them to understand the word.
Right.
So how do we do that, in your opinion? How do we make that connection there?
I think it's just about being honest that even someone that's been in church for years and years and years, or someone that's a leader in church, just be honest that they struggle with connecting with the word, that they struggle with dissecting the word, that they still have to reach out to other peers, have mentors, or just use different avenues, different apps to help them understand. Because I think a lot of people just either sugarcoat it or they ignore it, or they just lie about it and pretend that they know it all when they really don't. And then themselves are questioning a lot of things. And so I think that's just the biggest thing, is just being raw and honest and open. And when we have someone that's either a non-believer or is a believer that's struggling, being honest and saying, I have the same struggles. It might not be the exact same, but I've been through that, and I'm here to be an open book. And if you need to ask me anything, you can. I've just noticed more and more that I've shared like my testimony and my story and my background. There's so many people that connect to it. And they're more open to opening up to me, knowing that I have any sort of empathy or honesty.
Yeah. There's that song, and I forget who sings it, but it poses the question, why can't we just be broken together? Mm-hmm. You know, and we all have our struggles. We all have those things. But, you know, it even comes down to the point of, have we even considered some things? Mm-hmm. For instance, when Mary got to the tomb, she saw that his robe was folded and not just thrown. What was the reason for that? Is there a reason? And there is, mm-hmm. but do we delve in it enough to want to know the whys? Or are we just surface level of, okay, yeah, he rose again on the third day, but are we really getting into the word? And I think what happens there is that our preaching and teaching is so surface level, mm-hmm. that people don't have a desire to go deeper in the word. Or maybe it's that they have a fear to go deeper in the word because they may not understand.
Right.
So with your story, if you were to speak to someone who was raised in a pastor's home, what would the most important piece of information you feel like you would need to give them?
I think mine would be, first off, just ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think that even I did see that growing up with my cousins, which I'm an only child, and so my cousins are like my sisters.
Sure.
I have tons of cousins, and they're all like siblings to me. But I think that all of us were timid in ways, or because of the things that we saw, we didn't want to open up as much, or we didn't question why things were being done. We just kind of rolled our eyes and talked amongst each other about the things that were happening. But I don't really remember anyone going to the adults in the family and questioning it. And so I think if I could go back or counsel someone, I'd definitely say it's okay to speak up and ask questions. You may not get the answer you want. It may be ignored. But I think that's one thing that I struggled with for a while. Why didn't I ask questions? Why didn't I speak up when I should have? I think another thing too, apart from just asking questions, is it's okay to go outside of your community to get those answers and to ask for help. I was so stuck in just my cultural church that I didn't explore going to other churches on my other days, whether that was another Hispanic church or an English church. I just stuck to what I knew. And I think if I would have branched out, or even at school, there's a lot of like Christian ministries at school that you can join as well. And I remember seeing those groups, but still being timid, as they're not going to understand me. I'm from a Hispanic congregation. They're not. It's different. But now that I have opened up, there's so many similarities. And so I think just being okay with branching outside of your organization and just seeking out those answers from other Christians as well.
Yeah. So you talked about that you really didn't ask questions. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that was more of a cultural thing within that concept?
Yes, definitely. I think the family that I grew up in, no one asked questions. Everything was, well, because it's been this way or mm-hmm. because I told you. Yeah. And they never explained, well, I told you because this is how it is right. or because this is how I think. It was just, you need to do what you need to do and just be quiet, be meek, don't say anything, don't cause any issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my son, Luke, who's 9, will ask why. Mm-hmm. And will ask why enough times that I have to just say, yeah. well, this is why. Mm-hmm. And so, but not all kids are like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember growing up in church and some of our pastors had teenage kids or, you know, 9 to 13-year-old kids. And it always seemed like there was always a hesitancy within even trying to make friends with people in the church. And I can say as a pastor, it's a hard job and it's easy to get hurt by the people in your church. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for us to remember that we don't go to church for them. We go to church for us and to worship the Lord. I wonder how it would have been different, though, had you sought out these other avenues. Would your family have even allowed that?
I think so. I think that they would have maybe encouraged it. I don't think they were closed off to say this is, you know, the only denomination that you mm-hmm. can follow or anything like that. I think that my aunt that was a pastor would have been supportive if I would have reached out. But again, I think that part of that was just being shy, being naive, not wanting to go outside of my comfort zone. But I think, too, part of me was a little scared to know that the deep down things that I was feeling were actually true and that the leaders that I was believing in were just using that platform wrongly, like I felt deep down. And so I kind of felt like if I did reach out for help, I was going to really kind of start seeing the truth. And I wasn't ready to deal with all the emotions and what was happening. And specifically at that time, my family was still very closed off and they weren't really taking responsibility or admitting a lot of things that were happening. And so I think it would have led me to some type of point where I would have had to crossroads and really recognize what was happening and have hard conversations. And I don't think it would have been a good thing then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always difficult when we approach people who are in charge mm-hmm. And even consider the idea that they may be doing something wrong.
Yes.
Whether it be family or not, mm-hmm. you know, that's always a difficult task. So let's get from, okay, you're old enough now, you don't have to go to church. What did life become then?
So when I turned 18, I moved away to college and I went to California. And that was the first time in a long time that I wasn't forced to go to church. My mother's family is Christian. My dad's family is actually Catholic. And so when on the summers that I would go visit them, they weren't active. They really didn't attend church, only for like special occasions. Mm-hmm. But I did get a glimpse of some Catholic practices. And my aunt and uncle that I was living with specifically in college were Catholic. And so they would talk about it here and there, but not really. But it was, to me, freedom. I don't have to get dressed up on a Sunday. I don't have to go on a Wednesday. I have my weekends back. And so it was refreshing until things started going hard. And then I kind of felt guilty for, even though I was going to church and I wasn't as deep into the word, I still had the presence and I still felt the presence. And in ways, I still found comfort, even though that there was a lot of chaos in my church. And so I started to feel guilty that I wasn't attending a church, that I wasn't seeking somewhere to go. And when I eventually moved back to Arkansas, my family at the time, my aunt, she decided to take a sabbatical and she wasn't sure if she was going to return to leading a church or not. And so she started attending a American Christian church, which was big on my family. This was the first time that they really pivoted. And so my aunt, both of my aunts, my mom, other members of my family started attending that church. And to me, it was super comforting to be somewhere new, somewhere different. And the pastor's wife is the one who really helped me understand kind of what had happened. I remember she was preaching one time on the pulpit about her childhood, and she was kind of condemning what I had grown up with. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being so shocked, one, that she even talked about her past on the pulpit in that way, and just kind of refreshing. It was so new to me, the way, the style of preaching that she did was just not what I was used to. I was used to more of the, if you don't do this, you're going to hell type of preaching. And so hers was more gentle, more honest, more deep. And that's what really kind of pulled me back in, because when I went to California, I went with a wound, but then just anger of being forced into church and forced into a lot of the things that I had to witness without explanation. And if it wasn't, I genuinely think if it wasn't for her, I probably would have went more years of not wanting anything to do with God, just like what I witnessed with my cousins.
Yeah. There is something about having a pastor or someone delivering a sermon that is authentic. Mm-hmm. And not just that they believe what they're preaching in, but they tell their story. Mm-hmm. They give viewpoints of when they were, you know, a child or when they were a teenager, how all of that came to mm-hmm. work. And so so it is refreshing to be able to hear that, as opposed to a legalistic view of this is what you don't do. And it always seems like there's more don't do's than there are to do's. But so now today you're married, you have a child. What's life like for you now?
So for the last couple of years, so we were attending a church, but we were still sidelined. We were going to church, but we weren't as deep and invested. And I think that has to do a lot with just both of my husband and I's past and traumas. We weren't really dealing with it. And so I think because we weren't dealing with it, we weren't allowing God to really heal those areas. We were just over the surface for many years. When we started to really get connected and join life groups and get into Bible studies and get more involved is when I started to see more change, more opening up on the both of our ends, and just more of that desire mm-hmm. to seek the word out more. And now my husband and I, we attend a really cool group on Friday nights, actually. And it's a lot of families. We bring our kids, and it's families from different denominations, which I love. I love being able to hear everyone else's perspective. But also we get really deep and we talk about all of our past. And so we will read off a scripture all together. We'll read it about two or three different times in different versions of the Bible. And we just dissect the word and we'll ask questions. What do you think that this passage says about humans or about God? Or what'd you take from this passage? And I really like that we're just dissecting it a little bit at a time. It really helps me understand it. Because now as an adult, I notice that a lot of the word was just completely twisted. And so I'm having to now untwist scripture and really recognize it for what it is. And so this group is amazing, and it's brought so much healing to mine and my husband's lives. And even my daughter, she loves going on Fridays and gets to hang out. And it's very intimate at times. And we worship, like we've cried together, we've prayed over each other. And yeah. So that's where we're at now.
So what would life be like without that group?
Very difficult. Very difficult. We're there for each other in the sense of if someone needs groceries that week, we'll get it. And so we have dinner with each other on that night as well. And so I can reach out to them outside of just that Friday night. I can text them, call them throughout the week, and so can my husband. And so I think that we wouldn't be as connected without that group. Mm-hmm.
So how important is community outside the church?
So important. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I didn't realize until I was an adult. I was so used to my family and my church community for so many years. And even when I moved out of my mom's house and became an adult and all of that, I was still very much isolated because that's all I saw. I didn't really see my mom or my aunts have groups or hang out with their friends. I didn't see that. And so to me, it was still very odd to have a community outside of church or within church. It was very different to me. Yeah. And so now I see it as just more family than my own family.
Yeah. And, you know, we're supposed to look at church as a family, but I think it does us well to have family outside of the church that not only are we pouring into them, but they're pouring into us.
Right.
And a lot of times I think we forget that the evangelical position or the mission position is outside the four walls of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're just always fellowshipping with those inside the church, who are we reaching? Who are we trying to evangelize? And so, you know, with the group that your husband and I are in, there's some guys in there that I'm not sure that they're Christians, you know, but it's important for them to be there and to be a part of that group,
right,
and to understand the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
So with your podcast now, what is your central viewpoint? What is, if you had to sum up in one sentence the purpose, what would that be?
For others to know that they're just not alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just the biggest thing to me. I understand that not everyone's going to have the same experience I had or have walked down the same path. I know that that's just not possible. But as a young girl, I just never imagined that there's someone else in the world that has experienced growing up in a Hispanic family that's super religious. And I'm also first generation. And so that also brought a lot of other factors into play with my family. But then also that has experienced physical abuse, sexual abuse, being groomed, being sex trafficked, all of that. There was no one really in my community opening up about that, or someone that just looked like me that was opening up about that. And so I just want my podcast to be able to just reach someone and know that, okay, I'm not alone. I've gone through similar things, or I know someone that has gone through similar things. And I think this person can help them understand that it's okay to let go of those things, to let go of the shame, to let go of just all the hurt.
Yeah. And when you get into that abuse mm-hmm. factor and that trafficking factor, there's so much guilt and shame.
Yes.
Because while you weren't in control in that moment, you didn't take a stand
mm-hmm.
and you didn't say no. You just went with it. But I think in a lot of ways, children, while they intrinsically know that it's wrong, they're taught that it's okay because it's their parents or their loved ones that are pushing them through it. And it is so important for us to know we're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back, I know that in my life I can look back at all the bad stuff and know that Romans 8:28, that all things work together for the good of those that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose, really is true.
Mm-hmm.
Because those experiences are what are leading us to be able to minister to others who are going through the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Lynette, it's good to have you here with us today on Doc Talks. We appreciate it. So your podcast will go live when? Do you know yet?
So I'm aiming for August 27th, which is my father's birthday.
Okay.
And that's the grief part of it. I lost my dad. And so I think that would be a great tribute to him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm aiming for that, but not really wanting to put a pinpoint on it. But yeah. I'm working on it, and okay. I'm excited to have it out and see who it reaches and who it connects. Like I said, just by barely opening up to the small circle I have, I've had so many people that I wouldn't even think have gone through the things that they have gone through that's similar to mine. And so it's really opened up my eyes that, again, it's abuse and trafficking and just the things that happen in a pastor's family are very real. And I still don't think it's talked about enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's Surrender to Serenity.
Yes.
All right. And I assume it'll be on all streaming platforms.
Yes.
So you can find it there. Of course, I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. We want to thank you for being here with us today. Lynette, again, thank you for coming and sharing a small portion of your story. and your desire to help others. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.